welcome to the call. Welcome to the first 2009 CARE National Webcast Call. My name is Marva King. And I am the CARE Grants Team Lead as well as the CARE Program Coordinator. In the room with me, I have Michelle Mandolia.
Hello, everyone.
Michelle will be our moderator today. She's actually the CARE Measurements Team Lead. And also in the room, I have Dennis O'Connor.
Good afternoon, folks.
And Dennis has been the person that you see his name on the RFP, because he's our point of contact for questions. And it's also the one, if you have been emailing questions to, he has been the one that's been responding to you. So it's exactly 12:30. So I will start with the webcast now, and as people join, they can just come on. Before I begin, I want to tell you a couple things. If you look on that first page of the webinar, you'll see our names, my name, Michelle, and Dennis. Also, Jeannie Coughlin. Jeannie Coughlin will not be here today, but her name is up there. She is usually here helping us as well. And if you click on our names, that link to our names, you would get a quick bio sketch of us and our picture, so you can see who you're looking at and who's talking to you. We have, yes.
If you could, would you kindly give us the website information again to go on to find it?
Oh, okay. It's www.cluing.org.
Just I-N.
I mean, I'm sorry. Thank you, Michelle.
Mm-hmm.
Cluing, CLU-IN.org /CONF/ TIO/CARE. And that will get you to the page I'm referring to that has our names on there as well as a go-to seminar button. You had to register to access this by web or access this by telephone. So if you're not registered to access this by web, you may not have you may not be able to link. So you can look at that later. We have a full group today. We exceeded our expectations. So there'll be a lot of people on the call, on the line, as well as on the email, on the website. So I ask you to put your phone on mute. Unless you're asking a question. If you do not have a mute button on your phone, then you can hit *6. When you unmute, you hit #6. This is a question and answer session, a national question and answer session, so I am quickly going to go over a PowerPoint presentation of the CARE program, and then we're going to jump right into questions and answers. I do want to notify you on one thing that will be up on our website later today, is that our EPA Region 7 office has created an online tutorial for any group who is, hello? For an online tutorial for any group who are planning on putting in a CARE grant. So we have a link to that on the CARE National webpage, but I will also give you that link today so that you will have it on this phone. And that just went up yesterday. And that link is www.epa.gov/region07. That's to help you, any of you who are need a little additional help for the proposal. All right, so we're going to get started, and I'm going to go to the Go Seminar button. You see that on that page, and for those of you who are on the phone, you were able to access that button, this PowerPoint before today, and you could have downloaded it. Okay. Sorry, I'm going to the accessing thing that you guys had when you have to first get on. All right. So it's loading up now. And this PowerPoint is just a very brief overview of the CARE program for those of you who may not be aware of it. And the first slide says the CARE program, Request for Proposals, Q&A webcast, February 2009. The next slide answers the question, what is CARE? CARE is a community-based, community-driven program created to build partnerships to help communities understand and reduce toxic risks from all sources. The second slide is why CARE? Why do we need a CARE program? We created the CARE program to directly respond to community requests for help. It was developed as a means to address concerns that are beyond reach of national regulations. So there's a lot of different questions out there that you're asking in your community that the EPA does not have a standard rule or regulation about it. It's also to integrate agency programs to improve support for communities. We like to do that on a local level with our partnerships. We ask you to collaborate with other programs besides EPA, state and local programs, or other federal programs. CARE mobilizes new resources and uses local knowledge to achieve results. And it develops community consensus on sources of risk and risk reduction options. My next slide is titled Our CARE Goals, and those are the goals of the program. These goals are in your RFP as well, and it's basically what I've been saying all along, reduce exposures, help communities gain an understanding of all sources of exposure to toxic pollutants, work with your communities to set priorities for risk reduction activities and create self-sustaining community-based partnerships that will continue to improve the local environment. That's what CARE is, and it's reiterated throughout the RFP and just about in everything we do with the CARE program. Those steps are reiterated. Next slide. A few more strategies that we have for CARE, and it's what we ask you to do. We ask you to build effective collaborative partnerships, and these partnerships must include residents, businesses, and governments. We understand in a level one, you may not have a business partner at that time, but you have to talk to us about the potential of obtaining a business partner. Level twos have to have business partners. CARE strategies, we provide more than money. We provide information, tools, and technical assistance. When you are awarded a CARE grant, a regional team, an EPA regional team is formed to help you with that strategy. And of course, again, as we always say, you have to build consensus in your communities on priorities for effective action to reduce risk. CARE strategies continued. We ask you to focus on action. We want you to mobilize your local resources and utilize our voluntary programs to implement risk reduction activities. We don't expect you to know what voluntary programs to use right now. It'd be good if you do, but you do not have to know. You have to show us that you intend to do that. Facilitate networking among CARE communities. At the CARE program creates an atmosphere where you can network among anyone else who has a CARE project, community partnership. And again, we want to build long-term community capacity so you can continue to improve your local environment. Next slide. This shows you in a nutshell how CARE works. It's our standard, how does CARE work? You join together, you build your partnership, and you identify your problems and solutions. That's one and two. That's a level one grant. In the RFP, there'll be a lot of tasks underneath how to do that, but in essence, that's what a level one is. You join together, you build your partnership, or you grow your partnership on your problems, and you prioritize risk to start implementing solutions. You do not have to implement any solutions that you get to a level two, of course, but at the level one stage, you identify what you're going to implement. The level two stage, that's when you implement your solutions and start having risk reduction. That's why the level two is a little bit more money. And at the same time, you have to show us that how you're going to become self-sustaining. Next slide. It's a little slow, but here it comes. The title of that slide is Care Creates Change in EPA. And we want to show you, we've been in existence since 2005, but we have created change. We're starting to see some change in the way EPA is doing business with communities. CARE was created because we built upon current and past community-based programs. We had a community-based environmental protection program called CBEP. We have a watersheds program. We also have an environmental justice program. These programs were already in existence at EPA, and then we built and created the CARE program. And we took the best of those programs and we put them into the CARE formulation. It creates change in EPA because we have strong headquarters people working on the CARE program. Three of them are in this room right now. And then we have regional partnerships for implementation. When you are awarded a CARE grant, there is a regional team that becomes your partner. It creates change because of CARE's unique organizational structure. It requires us to work together across agency stovepipes. So we work on a matrix level more so than a up and down hierarchy level. CARE creates changes in the way environmental programs are framed, so they are seen by EPA staff the way citizens see them. We know in your neighborhood you see all the risks as one, and we're hoping that with the CARE program we can reduce those risks that way with you through the CARE partnerships. And we encourage two-way communication between EPA and communities. EPA is your partner. That's why CARE is a cooperative agreement and not a straight grant program, because EPA is your partner, and so we have a big stake in this grant program for you. How is CARE funded? First of all, it's nationally competed, and it's a cooperative agreement. Again, it's a type of grant, a cooperative agreement. But a cooperative agreement means that we have a very intense technical assistance input into your project. Level ones on an average receive $90,000. You can get up to $100,000 for a level one, but on average we're seeing it in the 90s that people are being awarded a level one. Level two on an average receive a $275,000 award. Again, you can obtain up to $300,000 for a level two, but that's what we're seeing on the average, so we wanted to let you know that.
And that is up to $100,000 and up to $300,000 of EPA federal funds to answer one question I've already seen we've gotten.
Okay, thank you.
It does not include the matching funds.
Yeah, and that is Michelle, and she'll be going back and forth with you on the questions in a minute. Okay, I wanted you to show in this slide, it says CARE Cooperative Agreement and the dollars that we have. If you remember, I told you we started in 2005, and we started with a pretty low budget of $1.9 million that went to grants, so we were only able to award 12 grants. Since then, we've grown, and it varies according to what we get from Congress. Last year, we were able to award 18 grants at $2.5 million. This year, we, as you know from the RFP, we are going to be able to award $3 million total. Right now, we have 68 grants to 64 communities. The difference in the numbers is that four of our grants who were level ones moved up to level two. So that's why we say 64 communities. The next slide, I've been saying this all along, but I will emphasize it again here. Care is more than money. The most important thing we think we bring you is technical support and information. We bring you scientific expertise and assessment. We can bring you community planning to help identify and reduce your risk. We bring you access to our voluntary programs, networking opportunities through either the email or webcast or conference calls or trainings, and shared learning among each other. These are some of the tools. This slide is called Care Tools for Communities. These are some of the tools we have up on our web that we thought as a program, as we were developing our program, we felt that you needed, and you told us some of the ones that you needed. So they're as a result of conversations with our care communities. The first one is the Care Resource Guide. That is an online resource guide. You go up on our website and you can ask a question if you're looking for anything that you need to know about indoor, air, water, waste, recycling. It will bring you to some resources for you to find. Anyone can use that, even if you're not a care grantee. You can use any of these tools even if you don't get a care grant, because they're up on our website, so they're available to you. Our community guide to EPA's voluntary programs lists what they are, and you can look at that as you're submitting your proposal. There may be something in that guide that quickly attracts your attention that you may think you may need. The roadmap is something we put up this past year, and that is a 10-step method for communities to access and prioritize their local risk. That was developed out of our Environmental Justice Advisory Council at EPA called the NEJAC. They came up with this roadmap, and they adopted it for the CARE program, and it's a way that a lot of grassroots communities are using this, and we just have it available. We are not telling you to use it. It's just available for you if you need it on the web. And last year, we also created a grants guide. We are in a memorandum understanding with the Centers for Disease Control and ATSDR, and we, as a group, as a federal group, felt that our care communities could benefit from these a combination of these funding sources. And we hope that, again, this is online. You do not have to have a care grant to use it, but we thought that this would be a benefit to any community out there who are looking for additional funds. It helps your sustainability aspect that we require from the CARE grants as well. Next slide, and we're almost done. This just shows you at a glance all the CARE communities out there, the 64 communities we have, that we have awarded since 2005. And we're across the nation, as you can see. There's a few states not awarded, so if that's your state, you have a good chance. Next slide. And this is the last slide, and it gives you our current CARE co-chairs. Pat Carey is from the Office of Solid Waste and Emergency Response. Gail Bonanno is from the Office of Water. It gives you the CARE hotline and also our CARE website. Are there any questions about this slide? Are there any questions about the presentation? Okay, great. So what we're going to do is I'm going to turn this over to Michelle. Again, Michelle is the one who will be asking the questions, moderating the questions, and she'll explain all that to you in a minute. And then we'll get started. I just want to remind you one more thing. There is a feedback form online that we would like you to use when you're through with this presentation. So we want you to use the feedback form. And I need to get Michelle back to the space that she needs to be at. Thanks, Michelle.
Thanks, Marva. Okay, great. Well, as Marva had said, the main point of having these webcasts is to give you all a chance to pose specific questions you may have, even after looking through our extensive RFP and looking at our questions and answers document. If you still have lingering questions, we want to give you access to us. So as many people have already seen, you can submit questions over the web. So we also, though, want to give folks on the phone a chance to ask questions. So what I'm going to do is switch between the two. I'm going to start with questions we've received over the web, and then I'm going to take one from the phone and back and forth. And I do also want to say that many people have multiple questions. I do want to give each person who might submit a question a chance to ask at least one question, though, before going back to a second question from a single individual. So if you've submitted multiple questions, I will be skipping over them and taking new audience members' questions before going back to yours. And we typically have had a chance still to get through all questions, so that shouldn't be an issue. So I'm going to start with a question we received over the web, and that the first one is from Dennis with the Little Miami River Partnership in Ohio. And he asked, in the narrative section, it says to provide a budget, but the budget is provided by a form SF-424A. Are we to provide the budget again and a narrative, or just a narrative of the SF-424A?
Okay, the SF-424A is a required form, and you saw that in the amendment that was issued. What we ask for in the narrative is for you to talk about those costs and what they pertain to in your written proposal. For example, if you have a cost for supplies, you have to link that to your project description. If you have a cost for personnel, you have to tell us that personnel is your project manager. So you have to be a little more descriptive of your cost. The SF-424 just lists numbers. The budget narrative lists reasons for those numbers.
So, Marva, would you say most likely they will be restating most portions of the budget, but along with an explanation?
That's exactly right, okay. Michelle. Thank you.
And so we're going to take one question over the phone now. Does someone have a question?
Yes, this is Donna calling from Virginia.
Yes, Donna.
We have identified a pollutant as a very significant problem in the city of Richmond, and we have already have in place a lot of communities, organizations, faith-based organizations. What we don't have is the way to identify various factors that contributed to the risk, or at least trying to identify the challenges and then prioritize it. But the rest of it is really a level two, so I'm just trying to get some suggestion from you as to would it be better for us to do a level one or a level two, given the certain communities already been built capacity-wise?
First of all, to get a level two, you have to articulate that you've done everything that a level one requires of you. So you have to articulate in writing that you have identified all the risk that's in your neighborhood, your community, and you prioritize those risks. If you cannot do that, then you cannot obtain a level two.
And the priority has to, the identification and setting up the priority has to be done from a group, correct? From the group that is in the group.
It has to be done by an established partnership.
Okay.
That's the essence of a level two. If you have not done that, then you have to apply for a level one to do that. Or maybe our care program is not the program for you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. We're going to take a question we received over the web then. This is from Sharon with Quad 3 Group in Scranton, Pennsylvania.
Okay, this is a technical problem, and we have a technical person that's on the phone with us right now, so he'll have to handle that one.
Okay. There are some issues, I guess, for a technical person. There are issues some with the sound and whether the webinar has started. Okay, so I'm going to skip over these.
I'm not sure about that. All right. Nice to know.
See, so
goodness. Isn't that working?
What's that readout line?
Go ahead.
Okay.
You can just click that off.
Do we want to state, some folks are having,
finding
the call-in number.
There seems to be some audio problems. Let me give you the call-in number for people who are having audio problems. So at least you can listen. It's 1-866-299-3188. And the access code is 202-564-2599#.
Okay. So hope folks are able to hear it then, and if there are continuing to be issues, there will be another webcast.
There are two more webcasts scheduled, and you know what they are, but I'll repeat them. One is on February 24th from 12:30 p.m. to 2 o'clock p.m. and Eastern Time. The other one is February 27th from 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time, and it will be the same exact webcast we're having now.
Okay, so just to take a content question.
And you have to register for those as well.
You have to register for those as well. Yes, Dennis.
Okay, just to take one content question then before moving back to the phones. This is from Biam Alexander with Synergy Force in Chicago, Illinois. Do municipalities, that is counties, commissions, et cetera, need to obtain a DUNS, a DUNS number, to apply as an applicant?
I think you can apply without your DUNS number, but you could not get awarded without it. So you can apply, but I believe the your project officer, your regional project officer, would be the one that will require it before award.
Okay, great. Thank you, Marva. So we'll take a question over the phone now.
Yes, this is Kathleen Welsh with Wyandotte Nation. And
hi, Kathleen.
My question is, the City of Wyandotte, we work with them on several projects, and they have, and I don't even know if this grant is for it or not, but there's an abandoned filling station there, and the city members, different people within the city, have come to us and asked if there's any way we can co-op with them to get help to take care of the underground storage tanks and things like that, and we don't know if this will work for that or what. So we're just trying to get some information.
Okay. Just so you know, we're not supposed to be answering specific questions about specific projects.
Yeah.
But I would like to refer everyone to the purpose of the Level 1 grant. And the purpose, again, is to form a community partnership that includes residents, business, and government, and also to identify all the risk in your neighborhood and then to figure out solutions for those risks and prioritize those risks.
Okay.
And so if you stick to the purpose of a Level 1, that should answer your question.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. I'm going to turn back to questions we've received over the web. This is from Jeff with the University of Northern Iowa. Is there a matching fund requirement?
No, the CARE program does not require matching funds. We don't even really require you to put any matching funds on your application, because the reason is if you do put matching funds on there and you are awarded, you're going to be accountable for that. So we don't care about your matching funds. It's not going to help you get a CARE grant. So, and we don't require it.
Certainly don't require it.
I'm sorry?
I have a question from Wisconsin.
Okay, okay.
Well, I didn't know if you're done. Go ahead.
Did you want to say something?
I was just going to add to though we don't require matching funds, I would say in the past, if they have had an influence, it does show intent if there are funds or staff members that... Marva's saying no. Okay.
The reason I'm saying no is because we've had some problems before with people who put it on and it was awarded, and they were held accountable for that.
Right.
And so if you do not want, if you don't care if you're held accountable for it, then you can put it on there. But we do not require it. It's not part of our criteria.
That's true. So ignore what I said. Okay. We are turning to the phone. And so I guess go ahead with your question.
All right. Are you familiar with the Great Lakes Areas of Concern Remedial Action Plan?
Yes.
Okay, I and TMDLs, obviously. If you would have, if your watershed would have an existing remedial action plan that's been approved by EPA and the state, and an existing TMDL plan for addressing pollutants, would you consider those an adequate assessment of risk in order to then move up to the level two?
Again, I will have to repeat this, I think, a number of times. I don't want to reply to specific questions about specific projects. I have to refer you back to the purpose of the CARE program, and that is that your community partnership identifies the risk, that community partnership prioritizes the risk, and you have to articulate that was done for level
yes.
two.
So if you were to articulate that was done, and they had public processes involved, then that would then establish an existing plan and priorities, and then you could apply at level two.
So again, we're not going to respond to questions about specific scenarios, but you know, again, it just has to, with the partnership, identify sources of risk from all media areas. That's water, that's from the land, that's air issues. And you need that collaborative partnership, but we can't respond to specific questions about specific projects.
All right.
Okay. So we're going to take a question from the web then. Amanda Whitaker from Tennessee, what would be the recipient's matching portion? I think we've already responded to that. I'm not
right.
quite sure what
yeah.
it is. Okay.
There's no matching portions.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure we had responded. Let me take a new one from the web then, which is from Michael in St. Louis. St. Louis is shown as having a CARE grant. How do I access this information and the contact person? Our CARE website is the place to go. That is www.epa.gov/care, and you can see the St. Louis grantee is one of our 2005 communities. And you can see a description. You can also see their final report, so you can read about everything that they did in their grant program and the folks. I believe it'll list specific contacts who worked on it. So we'll take a question now from the phone.
Yes, this is Dale Stevenson from Boise State University.
Yes.
And I just have a question concerning a clarification in the RFP. In the RFP, it states to survey more than 9 members of the public without prior approval by the Office of Management and Budget of the survey instrument. And we wanted to know if this survey restriction applies to the prioritization process with your stakeholder group.
The survey restriction applies to CARE grant funds. So when you're awarded a CARE grant, you cannot use our funds to do a survey. What our partnerships have done is have one of their partners take care of the survey, use non-CARE funds.
Yeah,
but
very
good. But it's not the CARE program requirement. It's a federal government requirement.
I got you.
Okay.
And you can use. You cannot use federal funds for developing the survey or administering the survey, but you can then use the funds for looking at the data.
Okay, very good. Yeah, I understand that.
Okay,
thank you.
Frequently the more resource-intensive piece. Okay.
Okay, for those of you who are having trouble on the web, still having technical problems, I just emailed the technical contractor, so hopefully that will be solved soon.
Okay, so a question on the web now is from Alex in Seattle, Washington. What is the likelihood of a project getting funded in a city where there is already an EPA CARE Level 2 project?
We have had some cities who have had more than one CARE project in the city. It's all related to competition and the quality of your application. But just so you know, we are a program that believes in demonstrating a variety of applicants across the nation as well as cities and towns. So it's not a very good chance that you would get a CARE project in the same city. But it has happened.
Page 38 of the RFP lays out the a national selection evaluation criteria. And in fact, right there, it specifically speaks about the geographic diversity that we're looking for. So that's one of a number of criteria. So it's not such that we would exclude someone, but you need to be aware of our evaluation criteria.
Did everybody hear Dennis? Hopefully.
Okay, great. So we'll take a question over the phone then.
Hi, this is Julie from Columbus, Ohio. Some of the previous US EPA grants have required community involvement right off the bat, where you have to have some type of community notification that you're applying for this grant. Is that required for under the CARE grant?
Some type of, did you say identification?
No, notification.
Notification from the
yes.
community?
Well, you have to either publish it in the newspaper that the community is actually going after this grant and hold a public meeting. Is this required underneath the CARE grant?
No, it's not required. But we do require you to have community residents involved in your partnership. And what I've seen in the past is that there might be a letter of commitment from a community organization.
Okay.
Okay, great. We'll take a question then from the web again. There are a few questions from Susan in Blacksburg, Virginia. The first is it wise to reach out and make connections with currently funded CARE grants in our region? For example, for us, that would be South Charleston, West Virginia.
I mean, is it wise? You may want to, I mean, I can't tell you what to do, but if you have questions about the CARE program or about being a grantee, sure. I mean, our CARE partnerships are very eager to share and what they're doing under the CARE program. So it will not hurt you to reach out.
Okay, and I'm going to, because this is also about partnering, one of Susan's other questions, and then Susan, I'll come back to your middle question. Can you discuss more about business involvement? Can it be a coalition of business groups, or should it be the businesses that may be the main polluters in our community?
All of that we would like, Susan, all of that. And we've seen all of it. We've seen small business as well as business associations as well as the major polluters.
And just as a more general observation, again, we encourage you to go look at the extensive list of CARE projects, and from there you should get a glimpse of what other successful CARE grantees have done. And you'll see there talking about reaching out to business communities of really all ilk. So again, a lot of your questions can really be informed by taking a look at the information we have on the web about successful applicants.
Okay, so we'll take a question over the phone now.
Hi, my name is Bonnie from Indiana.
Hi, Bonnie.
Hi. I work with the Department of Environmental Management, but with a lot of watershed groups, typically through 319 programs. But I have a group who is interested in a CARE grant with other partners in their community, and it's more of a rural area. Is a watershed scale appropriate? I know the RFP said you don't want larger geographic regions for this, but it did mention that if it's rural and spread out, that a watershed is okay. But to what size of watershed would you cut this off or consider too big for this effort?
Well, a watershed is okay. However, we do have something in our Q&As that talk about that. I encourage you to look at our questions and answers document if you haven't looked at it or not. It specifically goes to size. And if it's too large and it'll be a judgment call on our part if we feel that it's too large.
And you said there's a Q&A section where that's discussed in the RFP?
No. On the web page where you download the RFP from, there's the RFP, and there's a amendment to the RFP, and there's a question and answer document. And it is discussed there further. It also is, just for everyone to know, you should become you should periodically go up on that web page, because when we get through with these webcasts, if we have questions and answers that we have not already answered in the Q&A, we will put an addendum up there that will give you some more questions and answers that will help you with the fill out your proposal.
And it's a great document to look at if you haven't looked at it already.
And to get to your question, it really has to do with a size issue. We're talking about communities. Obviously, if the watershed becomes too big, it's no longer a single community. The Chesapeake Bay is an enormous watershed containing multiple communities. So it's really your judgment call, but keep in mind, care is about communities working together. And when they get too large, that's simply not going to be the case.
Sure, and it's interesting because some of these issues that this group's looking at are countywide or several countywide, and you know, if they select a small area like a sub-watershed or one town to address this, it really is relevant across the whole county or something. So I was wondering as well with, you know, can this be extrapolated to a larger area if the grant focuses, you know, on a smaller area, can it be extrapolated and get help for the larger watershed or county? It's kind of a scope issue.
I have to keep in mind that it's a competitive process, and if people are looking at your description as being too large, they're going to make a judgment call.
Sure.
You also can't start out with just a priori assuming it's the watershed. Remember, this is about stepping back, taking a look at toxics from all different media, and through that process, arriving at a conclusion of where you want to invest your time and effort.
Sure, like identifying a critical location or something. Thank
well,
you.
Well, looking at air and looking at other pathways as well.
Besides mm-hmm. water.
Sure.
Okay. Great. So we'll turn to a question over the web now. This is from Tony in Provo, Utah. Form SF-424 asks for a competition identification number and title of the competition under which assistance is required, specifically box 13 of the form. Where can we find that ID number, or is it applicable?
That ID number is just like a individual tax ID number, your Social Security number. That's your tax ID number for your organization, for like the Utah County Health Department. So you get that from your managers there. If you have a question about any of those forms, though, we're not the place to respond to that question. There is a phone number and an email and the web and the RFP that will take you to that response. But I just happen to know that number is like an individual Social Security number, and it's a number for an organization.
Okay, so we'll take a question over the phone.
Yes,
this is Donna.
I understand that there's some ongoing sustainability requirement for these cooperative efforts under CARE. Is that correct?
Yes.
You're looking for them to continue on after the CARE grant expires.
Yes.
Okay. What do you accept in terms of justification or of the assertion that this sustainability will occur? What kind of proof do you look for in the application?
Well, in a level one, we're not looking for proof so much as, you know, your intent. And we look at, you know, your broad-based partnership in a level two. That shows us your intent. If you're letting us see how you have a very diverse group in your partnership. So it's not so much you have to give us proof. We're just looking to see that you intend to do it and what you plan to do about it.
Mm-hmm.
And suppose, does that require financing? Does that require financial capabilities in the future?
Many people think that it does, and so we would look for some indication that you're thinking through that piece and how you might be planning for that.
Are you asking the question because you're planning on applying for a level two or a level one?
Yeah, for a level two.
Okay.
But you're going to have you've put together an organization, and you expect it to be ongoing to accomplish the goals, and you can't count on EPA financing in the future. but it's going to cost money.
Yeah.
You have to show some way of obtaining those funds to...
Right. Yeah, and so we know that you may not have that proof on day one, right? So we look at some of your history. You know, what have you done before? How have you, you know, sustained yourself before? We also look at what you're planning to do. Sometimes it's financing. Sometimes it's in-kind services. We have a number of people who are our partners. Provide in-kind services like meeting space or facilitation space or training. So if you let us know all that, so we know that you're the CARE funding is not the only avenue for you to get this work done.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
I'd urge you to look at page 34 to 36 of the RFP, which lays out the evaluation criteria. And that'll give you an idea of what sort of evidence we're really looking for.
Great. Okay, so we'll take a question that we received over the web then. This is from Gary in Secaucus, New Jersey. In some cases, environmental monitoring may be useful in identifying the magnitude and prevalence of containment. Contamination, I think, of a containment. Okay. This will and aid the prioritization process. In this monitoring sampling, is this monitoring sampling an acceptable level one activity? If yes, may equipment or services be purchased with a portion of the grant funds?
Okay, first of all, monitoring and sampling could become very expensive. So we look at, again, we go back, and unfortunately, I have to repeat again, we don't want to reply to specific projects. But we go back and look at the purpose of a level one, and if you're doing the purpose of the level one. And if most of your money is going to be spent in monitoring and sampling, we as the agency do not feel that you're doing the full-fledged level one. So you have to look at that. It's a judgment call. Look to your partners to help with that. We just don't want to see 50% of your money going to equipment and services for monitoring. It's not that it's unacceptable, it's just a judgment call as we're reviewing your grant application.
Great. So we will go to a question over the phone.
Can you explain a little bit about the sub-recipient from the Level 2 grant? If we have a state agency partner, could one of their staff be part of a sub-recipient receiving some funding to help with the overall coordinations and things like that? Even though state agencies are not eligible for this funding, but if one of the existing partner is a state agency, could one of their staff be part of a sub-recipient or be a contract to the Level 2 grant if they receive the grant?
Okay, so sub-award and subcontracts, they're available to the CARE partnership. Yes, you can put it in your grant budget. However, it's tricky because if it's a contract, it has to be competed. Even if it's a subcontract, it has to be competed. So you have to show us, and if you want to do it with your partner, you would have to do a partner you already had. You have to probably do a sole source justification. So it's a little tricky. That's all. I mean, it's not like you can't do it. You just have to follow the competition rules for it. And we will have something in our Q&As. Like I said, Jeannie Coughlin, who was supposed to be here with us today, had an emergency, and she is our authority on these issues, sub-award and subcontract. So I'll ask her to pull together a Q&A on that, and we'll have it posted in our on the web in our Q&As.
Okay, so we'll take a question from the web now. This is from Holly in Ashland, Kentucky. Will the CARE grant fund personnel salary for a program director already employed by our agency?
I have seen CARE budgets that say 25% of that personnel salary is to the program director because they're going to be managing the CARE grant. I've seen that before. So they're not going to fund the entire salary of the program director, but they will. You can portion it to the effort of that program director to the CARE project.
Thank you. Unfortunately, while you were starting with the answer, my phone got cut. So I'm hoping that perhaps your answer will be part of the web response later on posted.
Was that the answer about the personnel salary?
It was about the subrecipients.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
My assistant cut me off totally while you were trying to respond. So
oh,
I was
I'm
wondering.
Sorry. Yes, I'm going to put that in the question and answer document for you.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, so we're going to take another question from the phone.
I'm sorry, could you clarify that last answer on the personnel? Are you saying the money cannot pay for a full salary, or it can, it's just that they've done it in different percents?
I said it cannot pay for a full salary. If you're going to have a program director and you're going to give them some CARE funds, you have it, this program director is already established as the program director of that entity, then it has to, you have to adjust it to let us see that program, and that's in your description of your budget, that program director is going to be doing 30% of their time, this is just an example, on a CARE project. So you have to state that.
We're definitely going to question whether if that person is an established program director, if they can really relinquish all other duties and spend 100% of their time on CARE.
I understand that. If they don't have a director or a program coordinator at all in a level one, can they basically hire someone full-time with the grant money to do this job?
Well, I have to go back to the purpose of the level one. If that money is just going to be spent on a program director, I would definitely tell you that you are not going to make the competition high on the competition.
Yeah, again, look at the evaluation criteria, and I think that would give you a clue as to what we're really looking for.
Thank you.
Okay, so we'll take a question over the web. This is from Kathleen in Idaho. As far as breadth of application, we would like to know how broad a reach applications should embrace. I have noticed that many grants awarded in 2008 had fairly detailed and pointed application designs rather than broadly defined protection of the river descriptions. If we are interested in water quality as a resort area, should we also include a study of how soils and air contribute or affect water quality?
Again, we do not want to answer a specific question. You have to go back to the purpose of a CARE Level 1 and the purpose of a CARE Level 2, and you have to articulate that in your project description and match that up with your budget. Do you want to add anything?
Well, just I think a lot of people have in mind a specific project beforehand. This is really about the community being engaged and out of that process. And looking at across all the media, coming up with successful projects that can be then implemented and sustained. So keep that in mind and really try to keep an open mind rather than jumping in, I know we need this, so won't CARE do this for us? CARE's about a process. And a process is very, very important.
Great. Okay, so we're going to turn to the phone for another question.
I have a question.
Yes?
This is Patricia Juarez in El Paso.
Yes?
I don't find any section describing the overhead limit. And in universities, we have certain limitations about overhead percentage. Do you want to make a comment on that?
Well, you can, I don't think we have anything that tells you what your overhead limit is. If you have an indirect, negotiated indirect cost rate, you would just put that on there. But if you have an overhead, we don't require an overhead limit. However, we're going to look very closely at your budget, and if your overhead limit is taking up the bulk of the budget, and it's taking away from the project that you need to do, then you won't be as competitive as somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we'll take a question over the computer then. This is from Raquel in Maryland. What is the ratio of applications received to grants received, given?
Last year we received about 130 proposals, and we were able to award 18 grants. And it varies. The year before, we received about the same amount, and we were able to award 22 grants. So it varies.
Okay, we'll take a question over the phone.
This is Courtney from the University of Georgia. Can you tell me how it affects the community's application if they have received a prior Brownfields assessment grant in the past 7 or 8 years?
It doesn't. It's not a detriment to their application at all.
Okay, I mean, this would build on this what was done with that grant. I just didn't know how you factored it into the assessment.
Well, it depends upon how you write it up. We have had, for example, environmental justice grants that have been built upon, and they wrote it up as, you know, because they were able to have an established partnership. We've had grants that came out of Centers for Disease Control, local public health organizations that have done some identification and prioritization before and building partnerships. So it's really a competitive process. How you write it up tells us, you know, if you're going to be successful or not.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're taking another question on the web. This is from Chastity Miller in Malone, New York. What types of organizations should be considered for the partnership?
That is up to you. We just require that you make sure you include community residents, government, local government, as well as businesses.
And this is another example where a little bit of time looking at successful applicants, I think, can help you answer that question yourself.
Great. So we'll take another question over the phone.
Okay. I was going to say I could do a second question if there aren't any others.
I have a question.
Oh, go ahead.
This is Vincent from Texas A&M.
Yes.
When you indicate that there must be a business as part of the level two, if there's a business that's identified that's sort of part of the problem that may not want to participate in the project, do you require like another business? I mean, how does that work if the business that we identify that may be the source of the problem?
Well, we have awarded projects like that where we have seen that partnership have other small businesses in their partnership at the time of award, but they also articulate the intent of working towards partnering with that organization that was a problem. Just be truthful, you know, talk about the history of your engagement and your desire to partner.
Okay, I got you. Thanks.
Great. So we'll take a question from the web now. This one's from Amanda Whitaker in Tennessee. Do federal agencies count as a match? I'm just not quite sure if that's...
We don't want you to put any matching on your proposal. Do not put any matching funds at all. That's simple.
We are interested to know about other federal agencies you are working with, though.
We are definitely interested to know that.
They'd be useful partners, and you could think about them in the context of partnerships.
So I want to turn to the phones if there are still first-time questioners, because we still have a number on the web. So anyone on the phone who has not yet asked a question? And if not, I'll turn back to the web and go through several questions here then. This is from Melanie in Florida. Can Level 2 funding be used to construct a project for educational demonstration?
Again, we don't want to answer specific questions about project descriptions, so we go back to the purpose of a Level 1 and a Level 2. So look at that purpose. And what you have to do. Level one, identify all the risks of a neighborhood or a community and prioritize those risks. Level two, after you've done that identification process, implement and you pick one or two priorities, start implementing solutions. So if the educational piece is part of that process, that's fine. Mm-hmm. If you come, as Dennis has said, a number of times today. If that's how you start out with, then no, don't do it that way.
And sustainability. I mean, last of all,
right.
We want projects, level two projects that will be sustainable.
Great. Okay, I'm going to take another web question. This one is from Anna in California. Is it possible for you to repeat the web address you gave at the beginning of the seminar? I could not write it down correctly.
Oh, certainly. That's what
the
tutorial?
The tutorial.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is for the web, the grant writing tutorial. And again, this is a brand new web application. It walks you basically through a process. Visioning and otherwise process at the end, you would have a web app, you would have a CARE grant application.
I think she had it up there correctly. It's www.epa.gov/region07. Isn't that what, I think that's what you had up there.
Okay.
That's
and
what it is.
We are going to link to it from the CARE National website
It should be up today. The link should be active today from the CARE National website. But it is www.epa.gov/region07.
Okay. So another question is, can you explain the, quote, intent to use an EPA voluntary program, unquote, for Level 2 applicants?
For Level 2 applicants, wow. Okay. Intent to use. Well, you have to articulate that you are aware of our voluntary programs, and you can find that out from our webpage. We have a guide on there. And talk about the ones that you would be interested in utilizing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And they cover all media. There's a lot of them there. Mm-hmm. This is an extensive document, so...
Okay, I want to turn to the phone and see if we have any first-time questioners, any new questions from folks who have not yet asked a question. Okay. Okay, turning then back to the web, this is from Jeff in Kalamazoo. During the last round of CARE grants, how many applications, both level one and level two, did you receive?
I don't remember the distinction, but we received 130 applications.
Yeah, we do not keep track of them by level one, level two, so we can't really answer that question. We just know a lot of them.
Okay. This question is from Kim at Purdue University. We are defining our community to include both urban and rural areas. What is your view on rural pollution like runoff?
Well, that's fine. I mean, I have no view. This is your,
not our view.
Yeah, it's your community partnership view, Kim. That's fine. Just remember that it's multimedia, so it's not just runoff you have to talk about. But.
Great. Okay, this question is from Lisa in Sullivan, Indiana. On the watershed size, do you have a feel for HUC number size on limitation? As a rural area, we are trying to refine the delineation of a geographic place-based community. Based on prior Section 319 work, watershed-based delineation seems appropriate.
We have no opinion on that. Again, it's how big is your community, as Dennis had mentioned earlier. And we do have a question and answer about community, definition of community, right in the RFP on page 4. And so, you know, it says on here, what it says, the size of Missouri or the Columbia Rivers would be considered too large to be a community. But we don't have any set criteria for the size of a community.
Okay. This question is from Bonnie Lawrence in Buffalo, New York. Can a level one CARE project expand on an existing similar effort? Buffalo's environmental organizations are currently working to prioritize the local environmental agenda. Or does the CARE project have to start from scratch? Or do we need to wait until we have finished this work and apply for a level two grant?
I think you can expand on existing work, Bonnie. We've seen a lot of that with other projects. We know you don't just start Working in Your Neighborhood with the CARE grant. We know things are going on. It actually goes to sustainability as well. As a level one, you're already working on a project in another arena, and you're just pulling in the CARE program to assist with that.
A number of communities have already been using the PACE EH analysis tool prior to becoming CARE granting. So in general, you want to use all the resources that you have available, and that makes the best case for your proposal.
And we certainly don't recommend applying for a level two before you have truly met the level one criteria. So.
Right. That tool that Dennis mentioned there's a link in our CARE RFP for that tool called PACE-EH, as well as a link for the roadmap. So we try to give you all the information you need. That's why our RFP is very big.
Okay, this question on the web is from Brock in Greenville, South Carolina. Is this a reimbursable grant for level one? How does the payout work?
The payout is when you're awarded, you can apply with the EPA grant office with their financial division. And the payout is a drawdown payout. So as you need the money, you draw it down. You would get that information upon award, but I believe it goes right to your checking account. Mm-hmm. And so it's not so much a reimbursable, but if you're audited, they're going to expect that the money you drew down that month, that they're going to expect to see where you spent it that month.
Okay. And this is a question from Kendra in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Is farming considered to be a business?
I would think so, yes. I would call it a business, Kendra. And we have some things like farm associations. They're considered a business as well.
Okay. This question is from Ingrid in Boise, Idaho. What examples are you looking for in the application that a grantee has empowered residents and community members to improve the environment? Is there a high priority for past use of the EPA voluntary programs in evaluating applications?
That is not a high priority for us. We would like you to use EPA voluntary programs. We have awarded plenty of grants that did not use them until after award, and that's fine. Was that both for questions?
No, the first is what examples are you looking for in the application that a grantee has empowered residents? And that would be different from level one versus level two.
Right. So in a level two, we want to see what your established partnership is and how those entities are in your established partnership.
Mm-hmm.
On a level one, usually we look at that through the letters of commitments or something that tells us that this particular organization is willing to partner with you.
And clearly that the work plan includes affected residents.
Right.
In the process.
That's right.
Okay. So another question from the web is from Thomas in Long Beach, California. Is it possible to receive a grant even if you have already started implementing solutions as per level two?
It's a competitive process, so it's how you articulate it. If you have articulated that you've done everything towards a level two, and you're working on a priority, and this grant will help you work on another priority, sure. So it's how you write it up.
Mm-hmm. This question is from Anna in New Orleans. Okay. The RFA recommends separate write-ups on how our program covers each care strategy. Should that be an appendix?
I think if you look at the criteria that Dennis mentioned that starts on page 20-something, 28 or 29, it tells you where to put that. That's part of your criteria. You're letting us know that that you meet those strategies. So that's part of the narrative work plan.
Mm-hmm.
That's not an appendix.
You need to include that.
Yeah, you need to include that in your narrative work plan.
Okay, so turning to the phone, I think all of the internet questions we have now are from folks who've already asked the question. So first, turning to the phone, is there anyone who hasn't asked a question yet who would like to ask one? Okay, then we're going to start with folks. If you have asked a question before, now it's the time to ask a second if you have it.
This is Bonnie from Indiana.
Yes.
And you kind of touched on the previous question about letters of commitment for level one grants. Do you require or recommend letters of commitment? We were concerned that it said your application can only be 13 pages, but letters would be separate than that 13 pages.
Yes, letters are separate, so they're not included in that. We don't require them, Bonnie.
Okay.
But we have seen in the past that it goes to affirming what you're stating in your narrative proposal.
Okay.
I'll just say with folks on the phone, if there's another person who has a question.
Yes. I was wondering what percentage of your level two recipients were level one awardees?
So far, we've only had four. So this is a new program, and so we started out with level twos who had never been done the CARE program before. So it's very competitive. That's why I keep saying you have to articulate that you've done the process in some way through another program if you're applying for a level two.
But she also raises a good point. Even if you've completed a level one, you really have to apply again through the process for a level two. These are separate. You don't sort of automatically move from level one to level two.
Yeah.
So you need to keep that in mind.
Yeah, I didn't infer that, but you're right, Dennis. Even our CARE level ones who have completed their projects, they still have to compete for a level two. So they're competing against all of you who have never done the CARE process before.
Okay, I'm going to take a web question, and this is from Susan in Blacksburg, Virginia again. I think we've answered it, but I want to go ahead and make sure we address it. How broadly can we define our community? Most of our health planning here is done by the New River Health Valley District, covering three counties and one city. We would like to apply for a CARE grant for the health district. Is that okay?
Again, we do not specifically tell you what your community should be, but when you articulate it in your proposal, we look at numbers and geographical diversity. We also look at the distinction of how, miles or mm-hmm. that is. So keep in mind that it's a competitive process, and you're not only competing on a national level, you're also competing on a regional level. So, for example, Susan, it just depends upon how you articulate it. We can't tell you you cannot apply. We won't do that. But if it's too broad and the people who are reviewing your application feel it's too broad compared to other applications, then your scoring may be lower.
And again, please do use that questions and answer document, and there is one question in there, Susan, if you haven't already read that about community.
There, on page 4 of the RFP, it distinctly talks about community. And there are, and like Michelle said, there are also additional Q&As in the Q&A document on the web.
Okay, I have a new question on the web from Rebecca in Owensville, Ohio. When do you expect to have information that is location and dates on the training?
We're working on that right now, Rebecca. And if we get it before March 16th, we will definitely put it on the CARE web so you could be aware of that. Just so you people on the phone should know, last year's workshop training was in Chicago. And the year before that, it was in Atlanta. And the year before that, it was in Seattle. And the
before
first year,
was
in Denver. So we try to, our requirement is that it's at a hub, an airport hub, so a community will not have to go spend a whole lot of money catching a variety of planes to get there.
Okay, I'll turn to the phone. Are there any folks on the phone who have not yet asked a question who would like to ask one?
Can you address how EPA, in some of the EPA grants, if you become a recipient, there's opportunity to refine or to discuss your approach? Is there such a process involved?
Yeah.
There is. Okay, but yes. How about if you get rejected? Do you get any kind of feedback as to why your application weren't as competitive?
Yes. So one,
the process, if they don't get the application.
Well, it sounded like the question first was the first question about is there a process to refine if you are accepted?
Right. Well, I mean, do you have an interview process before you make final decision to come and say clarify your approach? I mean, will we be expecting something like that from EPA before I actually receive a notice that?
Yes. So when you are selected, you begin working with your project officer. Your region is your regional contact that will be your contact throughout the entire grant period, and they work with you to submit refine your work plan and submit your final work plan. And then also, if you are not selected, you have the option of requesting a debrief.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I am going to take a new question that we received over the web, too, from someone who has not yet asked a question. This is from Mark in North Carolina, if I can find it. How is the money expected to be spent if awarded a Level 1 agreement? Forming a community group that identifies and prioritizes environmental risks seems like it would only require personnel time. Are there budgets from previous recipients available for review?
There are no budgets available for review. That's the care partnership owns their budget. We don't give those out. It's more than our experience with it. It is more than personnel time because there's a forming a partnership takes a number of conversations and meetings. Also, a level one is more than forming a partnership. You've got to identify your risks. So there's a process involved in that. Again, I would suggest that you look at in the RFP we have a link to two processes that a number of our care grantees use. That is the roadmap and also the PACE EH process. That will give you some idea of what's involved.
And I'm not, just to add to what Marva said, I'm not sure if this is what you consider to be personnel time, but many people set aside some budget for an external facilitator. That is a person, but not necessarily personnel, because it is a specifically trained technical expert with the skills of a facilitator. Some people do look for technical expertise as well on small issue papers or to bring in for certain meetings. Some people need to pay for facilities, for meetings, that type of thing.
And I just found a page on the RFP where those links are available to you, those two process links, and that's on page 9. And if you click that on, that will show you the process. And we're not saying that you have to use those processes. We're just letting you know that these are what a number of care awardees are using.
Is there anyone on the phone who has not yet asked a question who would like to pose a question? Okay, I have one over the web from someone who has not yet asked a question. We have Quirina Vallejos in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. How much detail are you looking for in a description of your community's problems with environmental toxins? I presume a CARE award would assist a partnership with obtaining more detailed information about exposures and hazards in our area.
We have a term we use, bias for action, that came out of the that's talked about in the CARE roadmap, and it came out of the Environmental Justice Advisory Council, and that means you look for as much detail until you can start going towards actionable solutions for your project. So, for example, we don't expect you to do a full blown risk assessment. We expect you to do a screening to show that these are some of your problems in your neighborhood, and these are some of the ways that you want to address your problems.
And also, as far as in the application itself, a basic description would be fine using resources that you have easily available to you. Yes, we would be helping, EPA would be partnering with you and expecting you through the Level 1 process to be gathering more detailed information. You need not have that for your application itself.
Yeah, and Dennis just reminded me to remind you about the page limit. You have a 13-page limit. So you
you have to be careful that you articulate all the evaluation criteria, respond to all the evaluation criteria within that 13-page limit.
So on the phone, do we have anyone who has not yet posed a question who would like to pose one now? Okay, we have one on the web from Christina in San Juan, Puerto Rico. If you are currently working on an environmental justice collaborative problem-solving cooperative agreement project that will terminate in 08-09 and have already organized a partnership with several organizations, can this same partnership be used in this CARE RFP for a level two?
Yes, that goes to... That goes to sustainability. So yes, but you have to be careful. I do know that program, and you have to be careful to make sure that you have business in that partnership.
Yes, so there is no need to form a brand new partnership for a level two. If you have one that you've developed through another process, that's absolutely the kind of person who would be able to apply for a level two if they have, in fact, met all level one criteria.
Yeah, and going to back to what Michelle is saying, remember there's a criteria for that. You have to make sure you identify all your risks. You have to make sure you prioritize your risks. You have to come to consensus on that. So you have to do the criteria of a level one.
Okay. Do we have any first-time questioners on the phone who'd like to pose a question now? Okay, do we have any folks on the phone who have posed a question before but have a second question they'd like to ask?
Yes, Bonnie from Indiana again.
Okay, Bonnie.
Thank you. You mentioned a few points back that a facilitator could be considered a cost but not personnel, like, you know, you just need to provide the service for a facilitation. And you mentioned technical assistance being similar. Was I correct? So if you need people to help with a process that aren't paid personnel, hiring a facilitator, hiring a technical person to do a piece of this, that's not considered personnel costs.
That's usually considered contractual costs. So,
contractual, okay.
Yeah, so or subaward or something. So there's still going to be that competitive piece of that.
Sure.
We've seen more than anything, especially in level one, they're in-kind services.
That's
okay.
And if you state that, you know, that's a good thing.
Better partner.
That you have this
sure.
type of partnership. Yeah.
Sure. Okay, that makes sense. Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great.
That illustrates the value of partners and choosing
yes.
partners.
Okay, we have a question on the web from Gary in Secaucus, New Jersey. Letters of commitment are an element of the level one scoring criteria. Presumably, support from a partner in each sector is optimal. Beyond this, is there a value in submitting as many letters as possible?
First of all, Gary, it's not a requirement of our scoring criteria. That letters of commitment is just affirms what you've already been stating. We don't tell you for a level one how many letters you need to submit, just as many as you think to affirm what you're doing.
Okay, taking any questions over the phone.
This is Lee in El Paso, Texas. Can you hear us?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, we wondered in terms of working with partners in the community, and we're based in a university, not so much in terms of the overhead question, which was asked earlier, but in terms of whether a goodly percentage of a budget is buying technical assistance and facilitator time from one entity, such as the university, versus community agency investment. Can you speak to sort of how you see a budget distribution in terms of these issues related to not trying to have the budget all in one entity, but at the same time recognizing the need to support the skill time, perhaps to support the effort?
I mean, I can't speak specifically to that, but
yeah.
Your budget will be looked at in your evaluation of your proposal, and it'll be weighed, as a balance of what you're trying to do and what you write in your budget. Again, I have to go back to in-kind services. Are always a good thing. Again,
mm-hmm.
if you have someone down that a sub-recipient or a sub-award or a subcontractor, that there's competition requirements for that. So, you have to evaluate that yourself.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to take an internet question now. This is from Dennis in Lebanon, Ohio. Is the program description, in the program description, it says to utilize voluntary EPA programs. We intend to utilize EPA voluntary programs and other federal state agency voluntary programs. Is that okay, or do we only get to use EPA programs?
No, please, Dennis, use all the programs you need to use. We encourage interagency and state and local and tribal, we encourage all of those programs to be used.
That speaks to the partnership issue and illustrating to us that you have partnership with a broad range of organizations.
5 more minutes left.
Okay, 5 minutes left. We'll take a question on the phone.
Hi, this is Donna from Virginia.
Yes.
If we're applying for level two, and in order to demonstrate that we have organizations set up and that we have made determinations for priorities and our plans, those should be included as part of the appendices?
I mean, you should describe that in your narrative, absolutely, and you should be very clear that you have met all of those criteria in your narrative. If you have a report or something that you produced as a part of that process, you can include that as an appendix, but you need to make sure all the critical information is in your 13-page upfront piece.
And did you say this was a level two?
Yeah.
Because a level two, if you read the RFP, you'll see there's a limit to your appendixes. There's a page limit to that.
Okay.
To level two appendixes.
Okay, I'm going to take a question on the web. This is from Thomas in Long Beach. Are there any issues with funding faith-based programs?
Of course not. We have one in on our web that we've already funded. It's the Earth Keepers in Marquette, Michigan. So we encourage faith-based organizations.
Okay, I'll take a question over the phone.
Thank you for this.
We can't hear you.
Perfect.
Okay, Michelle.
Okay, I'll take one over the web. This is from Anna in New Orleans. Can you recommend risk ranking tools and other tools CARE would like to see used in this process, the level one process?
Again, I just would ask you to go into page 9 of the RFP that links you to two processes, the CARE roadmap and the PACE EH process, and that should be able to assist you.
Okay, any questions over the phone? Okay, I'm going to take another on the web. This is from Tony in Provo, Utah. One of the required forms asks for the end date of our proposed project. Is that regarding the current level we are applying for? Yes. Okay, another on the web, just because I want to get this last one answered that we have here. Roger Harrison in Georgia, our grant is around air quality, I guess a current grant, and our major contributors to particulate matter within our immediate area are public institutions and organizations, the county school system, state forest service, etc. With that said, do we involve a business just to meet grant requirements?
Okay, I'm confused on the question. I'm going to assume you're talking about a level two, since you restricted it to air quality. And I'm going to assume if you're talking about a level two and you're doing it on air quality, you've already met all the requirements of a level one, which is what you had to look at it from a multimedia perspective. And so with those assumptions, do you have to involve a business just to meet grant requirements? Yes.
Okay, and some of that goes to sustainability, even if they are not one of the issues issue areas that need addressing. We're just looking for that broad-based partnership. Okay, do we have any questions over the phone?
2 minutes left.
Yeah, this is Donna again from Virginia. Are there any scoring differentiation for level two based on the type of partnership versus the broadness or the quantity of partnership? When you assess these applications, is there scoring differentiation?
Well, there is, in your RFP, it tells you the scoring differentiation. For the level two, it starts about on page 34, and it tells you how much points you get for each evaluation criteria. So for the broad-based stakeholder group, it's worth 20 points. So it depends upon how you articulate that, in your narrative proposal. Does that answer your question, or?
Yes.
Okay.
So it is 1:59. I think it's time for wrap-up, and we've managed to at least answer all the web and hopefully most of the phone questions.
And that's great. And again, we have two more of these webcasts scheduled. One is for February 24th at 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time, and the other one is February 27th at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. And again, please go to our CARE webpage. Please access under the link for the RFP. There is also a link for the amendment, and there's also a link for the Q&A. And we advise you to do that because your Q&As will answer a lot of your questions.
And we will be updating the Q&A document that's there now shortly and posting a new one in light of some of the questions and issues we've discussed today.
So thank you so much for joining this call, and we'll see you if you come back on the 24th. Goodbye.